From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
This would be The Media Project, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and maybe, if we're really on our game, some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rick Smith, editor of the Times Union, and here is Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO
Hello.
Of Northeast Public Radio himself. And back from far-flung places, Rosemary Armeo.
Hello, happy to be here.
Wonderful to see you. Investigative journalist, former professor, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, as the king of Siam said. And Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston.
Nice to see you. Feel like it's old timers day at Yankee Stadium.
Well,
the four of us here together.
I resent
It's a reunion
that.
Show. You could retire at 30 now,
okay,
so that
okay. Well,
that's right. Old-timers who are Yankees are not old-timers in journalism.
Right.
You know, there is this trend I was reading in one of the news magazines about older people going on. You know, the new president of CBS News is a 66-year-old woman. So there's distinction in two ways. First, the first woman to head a major news division. Second, she's of a certain age, as we say. So
well,
I think this
well,
is good.
Well, the president of WAMC, a 29-station powerful conglomerate, he's 77.
Goodness.
Didn't Walter Cronkite have to retire when he reached 65? And now, now the chairman of the division is 66.
Well, I think what happened with him was that Rather was standing on the sidelines salivating, and the potential for losing him was so great at the time, how things change, that they had to X out Cronkite, who was the most important journalist in America.
So listen, there is fake news in America. How about that? And this time it's real fake news. 10,000 copies of a fake print edition of the Washington Post were published in Washington.
They were handed out in Washington, around the city. It's hysterical. It was a monster news day in the fake news world. Unprecedented, said the giant headline. Precedented spelled the way our
president. Yes, the way the president
spells
it.
The way he spells it. And it was a prank, a hoax, a parody perpetrated by the Yes Men, a activist project that's based here in the Capital District.
Can you get into trouble for doing that?
Well,
I
yes,
mean, could you get
sued? It's copyright infringement. The Post
sure.
is not amused. The Post says, they're not Post products. This is a widespread attempt to mimic the Post. So they're looking into it. But
this is a group that in the past took on Dow Chemical. So I don't think they're really worried about the Washington Post. One of their famous projects was they posed as Dow Chemical, and they apologized and said they would make reparations for that huge gas leak in Bhopal, India. Which, of course, Dow sure. Chemical spent years trying to get out of legally. And it was enormous news when they announced this. They had, just like now, a website to back it up, so they looked real. They posed as a corporate spokesman for Dow Chemical, and it made national news and embarrassed the company.
So
and, of course, it was a statement about how a good corporate citizen acts. So what are they doing with the fake Washington Post?
Just having fun.
But you could understand, I think, all of us at the newspapers would be a twinge upset if that, particularly now when there's so much sensitivity about what is real news and what isn't. And you know that it doesn't take much for some of the gullible public to look at that fake publication and think it's the real thing.
I do get that. And my Facebook, filled with journalists, of course, is just filled with outrage as well about this. Oh. On the other hand, parody is a really important means of expression. And you can tell that there's no attempt to make this look real.
And protected by the Supreme Court parody.
Yeah, this is political commentary. And, and they say, the Yes Men say, that they want to inspire the little man who feels powerless to act, that they can do something to bring about a change in government, a change in Trump, basically.
But, of course, one would only wonder what would have happened instead of the like-minded yes men and the Washington Post, whether it was a serious parody by some right-wing rabid group.
Breitbart did this, for example.
Yeah, would there be the outrage? One of the things that I liked about it the best, though, however, was they changed the Post's motto, which, you know, the Post adopted this motto after Trump took office, democracy dies in darkness, and they changed it to democracy awakens in action. There you go.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Anyway, so that's a fun thing to start your day.
Sure.
What do you think about Andrew Cuomo's latest effort to curry favor, some may say, with the press? I guess I gave away my opinion of this. He has announced a proposal included in his executive budget that would make acts of violence against members of the media a felony.
Oh, boy, I am so relieved, Rex. I thought you were going in another direction. Because, as you know, Andrew Cuomo, who would not come on to this radio station for 8 years, two terms, all of a sudden is all over us, like, you know, flies on honey. And he's been on several times. I think it's now 11 times in a row for about a half an hour. This is a guy who didn't want to talk to us, or actually specifically to me. So here he is. He's talking to us. He's talking to some person in the middle of the state. He's talking to WNYC down in New York. So somebody's calling shots over there, and I think to his benefit.
Yes, it's always a good thing when politicians talk to the public.
But to your point about this state of the state proposal, I don't know what his motivation is, but I do think it's an important statement to be made. And whatever his reasoning is, to get that out in the public is very important. Yeah. It's certainly not what I heard from the candidate for attorney general, who was silent, thinking about how he wanted to answer questions about press coverage and will they be punished if they go through a so-called red flag. I'm not sure what that refers to.
What do you think, Rex?
Well, I want to say two things. First, it's already a felony to assault in New York State, to assault a nurse, a utility worker, an MTA employee, an emergency medical services technician, or a process server. So it's not that we're in august company or anything.
Well, what about just a jabone standing on the subway? You mean if you assault that person, that doesn't matter?
Well, it depends. There are different levels of assault. But this is just a Class A. It has been just a Class A misdemeanor if you, like, punch somebody in the nose. But this would make it a Class D felony. So on the one hand, you'd say, well, of course, a journalist should be included in that batch of things. But I do think it is more... You know, sometimes politicians do the right thing while trying to do the convenient thing or the partisan thing. I think it's just part of his effort to delineate himself from President Trump and perhaps curry some favor with folks like you, Alan, influential members of the media, who are no doubt happy to have these initiatives that make him more.
Hey, Rex, could you just do me a big favor? I can recommend a surgeon to help you get your tongue out of your cheek.
Well, you notice that when Alan has been interviewing the governor, it's been on the telephone. So there is no chance that he will be punched out or vice versa.
There you go. But I think to Rosemary's point, it's better for a politician to talk to reporters in any case. So it's good that Governor Cuomo is taking a more proactive stance with the media, even though it may not be that he will be as accessible when you have really tough moments. You know, these things rise and fall depending upon the state of the relations between the media and the journalists.
You know, Rex, it's interesting because I know that one of the things I have to worry about is that somebody will say that you're a soft touch for Cuomo, you know, you're going to write me a letter. So I ask him every difficult question I possibly can. And one of them, which was fascinating to me, had to do with Tom DiNapoli. Now, Tom DiNapoli is the controller, for those of you who may be listening in Nacogdoches, Texas, is the controller of the state of New York. And they took away Tom DiNapoli's pre-audit function so he couldn't go look at the way contracts were going to be let in New York State. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people who thought that the massive corruption which we've experienced in Cuomo's office would have been found if they hadn't done that. So they did it. And every time I talked to him, I would yell at him about this. I'd say, why was that necessary? Why did this happen? What happened there? Now, I think when and if he gets disgusted with me, that'll be the end of this newfound, you know, love affair. However, I try to ask these tough questions. And then guess what? He does the state of the state message, and he's giving DiNapoli back his powers.
Cool.
How powerful am I anyway?
This is very impressive, very impressive.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. Let's say for the sake of discussion that Cuomo has decided, I'm going to treat the press nicer, and thus they will treat me nicer. Do you believe that there is a impact? I mean, in order to take it to Washington, it's been suggested by me, among others, and I know a little bit about how this works.
Yes, you do.
That although the reporters covering the president are trying their hardest to be fair and accurate, it doesn't make them mad, or it may give them a little impetus to really do investigative reporting on this particular president because of the way he's treated them.
Well, take the Jim Acosta case, for example. Who called on Jim Acosta the day that they got into their little tiff? Trump did. He knew that Acosta was going to give him as hard a time as possible. Then he started yelling at Acosta because he wanted to damn the press. So it really was a bit of a double, triple, quadruple.
But is Acosta, as a result of being picked on, is Acosta going to be more zealous in covering the president than he might be with another president who treated him more traditionally?
I have to say that I think it's unfortunate, but I do think that Charm Offensive works with reporters.
Yeah.
You can be tough with someone who is kind and accommodating, press secretaries or politicians or principals themselves. But I think that being accessible and being nice to someone, it does help a politician.
I don't think it's nice. I think it's being accessible. Those are two different things. Trump is not nice, but he's highly accessible, and he has the best media exposure of any politician ever, maybe in history.
That's an interesting
point. So if you talk to the press, there is a difference that occurs. When the governor was not speaking, when he was not very accessible, you are attacking him every day. Are you now doing that?
I've been critical of him, yeah, in my columns and other places, sure. I'll have to sit back
and look at that.
Put my hands on my chin and say,
If nothing else, there's a difference in tone that comes about. The other day when you began talking with him, you got, I have to warn you, we have a short period of time and many topics. He goes, yeah, you do that all the time. Tell me not to make political speeches. I consider myself chastised. So you made a point, but it also was with a touch of humor. That was not there previously. So, yes.
Couldn't be there. Because I wasn't talking to him.
Or vice versa.
It humanizes him, actually. It makes him more, being accessible makes them more human. And you would think that politicians understand that, but maybe it takes a while for them to catch on.
I've always said that the worst advice you can give someone who has to deal with the press is to say no comment, because that gives me the power.
Yep.
If you talk your head off, then you give me all this material, you automatically will look better, even if it's gibberish, witness Donald Trump.
Yeah, he goes out in front of those helicopter blades and he talks away.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now, what about if you're not going into a real journalism situation? Best example at the moment being Late Night with Stephen Colbert. Bernie Sanders, Julian Castro, Kamala Harris were there. And then Kirsten Gillibrand announces that she's, in effect, running for president on the Colbert Show. What about that?
What about it?
Well, isn't it an unusual venue? It's not as though Colbert is a hard-swinging journalist.
No.
He's an entertainer.
It's like Bill Clinton going on the late-night shows and playing the saxophone. I mean, I think it's been described that Colbert is so popular among the Democratic base that is a go-to place. It's no longer have to go to the editorial board of the New York Times. You're better served being on a late-night talk show.
Well, I watched the interview. The clip of it, and I could swear, maybe I'm wrong. Did you guys see it? And I thought maybe he was holding her hand at one point.
She grabbed his hand just before she made her announcement. She actually reached over and squeezed his hand.
It was part of a bit. I mean, it wasn't, I don't think she was looking for support. I think she, it was just the way she was talking.
It wasn't a Me Too moment.
No, it wasn't a Me Too.
And I think it's very, I mean, will columnists, will journalists say what they think about this Gillibrand foray? In other words, I think it's sort of foolish.
The campaign?
Yeah. I don't think she'll win. I don't know what she's after. It may well be that she's after the vice presidency, you know, on a ticket. But my theory has been quite a while now, Rex, I don't know if you agree with this, that that's what Cuomo wants. Because by endorsing Biden, and we made a lot of news when he said on our show that he was going to endorse Biden.
Well, let's quote him accurately. He did not say he's going to endorse Biden. He said that he thought that Biden had the best rationale for his candidacy, right?
It sounded to me like he was endorsing Biden.
There, that's a little
different. But the answer to your question is regarding how Jolabin is going to be covered. I suspect she's going to be covered thoroughly, and she's already taking a lot of heat because she flat out said during the debate that she was going to serve her full 6 years. She wasn't going to run for president. I think that the bigger issue for the press going forward is that there may be 24 candidates or more, and how thoroughly and how well and how frivolously are they going to be covered? How much did we learn from the Republican primary of three years
ago? Let's assume you learned it. Yeah. So what? Who cares what you learned, Ira?
Well, it's important.
It may well be, that's a joke.
I thought you were serious. I was like, wow, what's going on with these two?
No. But Ira, I counted 35. That's what I counted, 35 who are potential presidential candidates.
All Democrats?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you say, didn't we learn anything from the Republicans, what? You're going to tell one of those 35 people you haven't got the...
No. Stuff? I'm referring to specifically how much free airtime and unquestioning airtime that Trump gave. Now, I don't know that there's a Trump on the Democratic side. I suspect there will be one or more on the Democratic side who are particularly flamboyant and camera-worthy, and will they get a disproportionate amount of coverage, or will people such as Alan, who have already sort of made their decision on Gillibrand, she doesn't have much of a chance, will the media writ large say, well, we're not going to waste our time with her, and maybe that won't be fair to her?
Well, the journalists get into trouble when they tell you what they really think, as opposed to what's political.
Rightfully so.
In their venue. In other words, to me, Gillibrand doesn't have a shot. She shows up in the polls all right with, 12%, which isn't near the top. But Rex, I guess the question I would ask you as a guy who sits on an editorial board, who interviews all of these potential candidates who want to come talk to you, I guess the question I would ask to you is, at what cost does that occur to a journalist? I mean, if I call Kirsten Gillibrand up now and ask to have her on the show, will she say no because I'm not supportive?
You'll say yes because of your reach.
Probably, yeah. But
if she's smart.
But I think there's a political answer and there's a journalistic answer. The political answer that I would apply to this is I don't think it hurts her to run at all, and I think it's smart for her to get out early. She has $10 million in the bank right now, which is going to give her a nice boost. And for a politician who's only 52 years old, running and losing can be a good thing. Al Gore ran for president in 1988. He got the nomination in 2000.
JFK wanted to run. Keith Haver got as vice president.
If she emerges defeated but with name recognition, then it will be a successful effort.
But on the journalistic side, the question of what we learned, I hope, is, and a lot of people make these vows, people who cover campaigns and produce the coverage, I hope we learned that we need to cover positions on issues, that we don't just go automatically live to hot events. It's not that horse race coverage is in itself a terrible thing. Sometimes knowing who's ahead and who's behind helps voters to assess why somebody is going in a certain direction.
And as you well know, Rex, he sells papers.
Sells papers. I don't know that anything sells papers.
Well,
your kid's picture in the newspaper.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
I think the job of journalists, they can have whatever opinion they want, but it's to cover what actually happened. So when Elizabeth Warren announced, the first draft of articles were all along the line she's got the Hillary problem, she's not likable, horrible sexist stuff. And then she went to Iowa, and she wowed crowds.
Uh-huh.
And you could see a change. Reporters were reporting that. Wow, she can connect to people. She's fast on her feet. She's articulate. Wow, she's like a senator.
But let's keep those opinions to the opinion page or to stories that are clearly labeled analysis. I don't like it when beat reporters from the Washington Post and the New York Times and any other big papers are showing up constantly on cable television offering their opinion about people who they are covering.
Well, why do you think they do that, Ira?
Why do I think they do it? I think they do it for several reasons, not the least of which is their newspaper is allowing them to do it to give the newspaper exposure.
But
I agree with Abramson, the former editor of the New York Times, who does not believe that the Times should allow the reporters to
do that. Yes or no, but here's the point. CNN is doing it, MSNBC is doing it, and Fox is doing it. So my question to you, Ira, with your imperious sort of condescending attitude.
It's the home office.
Boy, those are adjectives I usually get.
This
good
is the home
you,
office
man.
For condescension.
So my question to you, Ira, is why is CNN doing it?
CNN is more than pleased to take a reporter from the New York Times like Maggie Haberman and put her on the air because she knows something. I'm saying that reporters should not be giving their opinions either in print or on the air about subjects that they're supposedly covering objectively.
I say foo on you.
I don't think that Haberman or Peter Baker this week do give opinions. They are talking, or Michael Schmidt, they're talking about their reporting and what they found. I'm not hearing opinion from them.
It's analysis. It's like a news analysis, which we always would label that way.
That's right. You've got to label
it.
Give readers just a little signal that this is something.
It's a bunch of baloney. It's,
but it's resulting in part in the reason why Americans do not trust the media, because they believe they have a point of view.
You put a news analysis on there, and you read it, and you know it's opinion. Come on.
Well, but it's reported opinion. It's not just somebody standing up and saying, here's what I think. It is sussing out what's going on and giving people kind of the story behind the story. Analytical reporting is really valuable stuff, I think.
You were on, let's say, less favorable terms with the governor, and if one day we had everybody in the newsroom here called in sick and you had to go downtown and cover a Cuomo press conference in that day...
I wouldn't know how to do it.
Well, but besides that, would it be unfair for Cuomo to think, well, I'm not going to get a fair shake out of this guy, he's constantly saying I'm no good.
By the way, every single president and governor and senator thinks that all the time. This guy's not my friend. He once said something difficult for me or the rest. We hear it all the time.
Right, but it gives them more ammunition if the reporter is making subjective analysis.
Well, then there's Trump, who has had the worst press, the most negative press of anyone in my memory. And he has made a point, and conservatives believe it, that the press is biased against Trump. They go after him one thing after another. Not that there really is one thing after another. They're just looking for it and digging it up. We have, by doing analysis, by doing principled reporting on facts that seem really to be there, we have given the impression that we're just out to get him.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I was just listening to NPR, which I don't always agree with, as you probably know, even though they're supposed to be our employee by the member stations. And they had a guy on. Frankly, I didn't know who he was, but he was talking about how Barr, in his testimony, he gave a complete different interpretation by what my eyes saw, because I watched the Barr thing. He thought he had not committed to releasing the Mueller report and all the rest of his stuff.
He had not either.
Right, he did not.
And he doesn't mind if journalists, he doesn't have any trouble jailing journalists. That was my impression.
Yeah, it was a troubling thing for journalists.
It was very disturbing.
My point is, if you would just listen to me, is that...
I listen to you all the time.
We can't avoid it. What were you about to say? Sorry, did we distract you,
Ellen? Let's just try to keep it lively. Two people can watch the same set of facts and come up with very different interpretations.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Before we go, by the way, if you want to share your views, media@wamc.org. Ira Fussfeld is here, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and I'm Rex Smith, and we're here in Albany, New York, speaking to you. Before we go, a very interesting white paper published by the Brechner Center for Freedom of Information at the University of Florida, which says that employees do not forfeit their free speech rights when they sign on. An employer cannot force its employees to not speak to reporters. You can't say, hey, you can't talk, only our PR people can talk. Yeah. Because while the First Amendment doesn't apply to private employers, there is free speech protection under the National Labor Relations Act. So this is a very interesting development, I think. It's good for journalism.
Does that apply if an employee is asked to sign a piece of paper saying, I've read the employee handbook and I'm not going to do anything other than what the employee handbook say? Does the law override the handbook?
I think it would. I think that it's saying that you have a constitutional right that the NLRA basically guarantees your free speech rights.
And would you believe that, Rex, if one of your employees joined, for example, Curtis Sliwa and those Red Hat guys, would you counsel them and say, if you're covering that, you can't do that?
I would.
You know what you would do.
I tell reporters you can't be engaged in community activity, that you really need to be independent. Yeah.
Communication companies routinely tell workers, don't speak for us, refer all questions to the upper office.
That's true. communication companies do that.
Well, I know.
I mean, journalism organizations are the worst on this.
With almost no time left, I just want to say I apologize to the three of you if
for
I've
your
said
rude
anything.
Behavior?
Yeah.
Okay.
For my rude behavior. And if I've said anything, because, and the real reason I'm saying that is I don't want Rex to dispatch a couple of reporters to get on my case.
Get on him. Get on him. We'll get him.
Rex would be more than pleased if he had a couple of free reporters who had the time to come down here.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm shocked that you have somebody in Washington.
I'm losing my voice here. Yeah, how about that? Alan Shartok, Rosemary Arameo, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith, we thank you, and we thank our producer, David Gustina, for his role also, and we thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.